This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Are you the owner of the house you live in? If so, and if that house has a mortgage on it, then our sponsor, the Equitable Life Assurance Society, has some interesting and important information for you. In just about 14 minutes, the Equitable Society will give you the facts about America's finest plan for home ownership. It's called the Equitable Assured Home Ownership Plan, a money-saving plan that has meant increased security for thousands of homeowners. Tonight's FBI file, The Mysterious Fugitive.
Record of your FBI that 97% of those the Bureau apprehends and takes to court are later found guilty and sentenced. Now, that record indicates a thoroughness and a basic respect for detail in every investigation, because it often happens that the only testimony for the prosecution is given by special agents of your FBI. After conviction, the file on that case is marked closed. Now, those files are records of jobs well done, records of which the Bureau is justifiably proud. For that reason, it is understandable that your FBI does not like to reopen a file that's been marked closed. Does not like to have to do its job all over again. That does not happen very often, but as you will see in tonight's case, it does happen. Tonight's FBI file opens at the mouth of a river located in one of our eastern seaboard states. A cabin cruiser courses slowly down the stream. Rounding a bend and reaching the sea, it noses into a weather-worn dock. Its pilot, a young man in his middle 20s, ties the boat to a stanchion and walks down the dock to a dilapidated waterfront hotel. He opens the sun-warped screen door, and it is the lobby.
Hello? Anyone here?
Just a minute. Well.
Hello.
What do you want?
Are you in charge here?
Yeah. Why?
I'm looking for information.
What about?
One of the boats that's tied to the dock out there.
Which one?
The Sea Maid 2. Who owns that, do you know?
No.
Well, isn't that dock connected with your hotel?
Everybody uses it.
Oh.
Look, mister, if you just came here to ask questions, I haven't got the...
Oh, no, wait, please.
What is it?
The Sea Maid passed me an hour or so ago upstream, and I thought I recognized that pilot. Did you see that boat tie up?
No.
Well, perhaps you know this man. He's about my size, blonde hair, mustache. His name is Sebring.
Never heard of him.
But if he uses this dock...
I told you anybody could.
Well, he couldn't have docked more than 10 or 15 minutes ago. Where could he have gone from here, do you know?
Oh, the town, maybe.
What town?
Fairfield, Clearwater, Twin Falls, they're all near here.
I see. Well, I guess I'll just have to wait for him.
Sometimes people leave their boats here for days.
I'll wait.
Who's there? What is it? What do you want?
I gotta see
you. All right. Come in. I told you, Anna, that I wanted to take a nap.
Yeah, I know.
Well, why do you disturb me?
Well, a man was here looking for you.
Huh? Who was he?
I don't know.
What did he want?
He didn't say.
Did he ask for me by name?
Yeah, he said you passed him in your boat upstream. He thought he recognized you and followed you down here.
Where is he now?
He left. He returned to his boat.
What did you tell him?
Said I didn't know who you were or where you'd gone.
I see.
He was going to wait for you anyhow.
This is bad.
Well, I tried my best to get rid of him, Frank.
Raise the window shade.
Yeah, sure.
Just a trifle.
How's that?
Fine. Now, which one is his boat?
Oh, yeah, at the very end of the dock there. You see it?
Yeah.
Well, he must be below.
Where's your husband?
He went into town.
As soon as he returns, send him up here. I have some work for him to do.
Hello, aboard there.
Yeah. Someone hail me?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Are you the owner of this boat?
Yeah.
I see your license.
Boat license?
Nope, the license for using this dock.
Oh, I didn't know that one was necessary.
It's a town ordinance.
Who are you?
Deputy Sheriff.
Oh, I see. Well, can I arrange to get a license from you?
Nope. Gotta get one in town.
They open this time of night?
Nope.
Well, then what do I do?
Leave the dock.
I couldn't do that.
Look, mister, that's an order.
Sheriff, I'd... Well, I might as well tell you why I'm here.
All I'm interested in is the license.
Listen, Sheriff, that boat right over there, the Seamade 2. I followed it down the river this afternoon. There was a man aboard that I think I recognized.
Well?
I know that government agents would be very anxious to apprehend him if he's the man I think he is.
Are you a government agent?
No.
Any kind of policeman?
No.
Well, then why are you so interested?
I was in Army intelligence during the war.
Buddy, the war's all over.
Yes, but don't you...
Look, which boat are you talking about?
That one down there. With the black hull.
Her name ain't Seamade 2.
Oh, yes, it is.
That's the Ebony Queen.
I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Come on, have a look for yourself.
Very well.
I'll prove to you that that's the Ebony Queen, mister. It's owned by a man named Smith who lives in Twin Falls. He ain't been in no trouble with the government ever.
Well, is this Smith about my size, blonde hair, mustache?
No, sir. He's short, fat, and bald.
Well, would anyone else be using his boat?
Nope. Well... What does it say there?
Ebony Queen.
Yeah.
I don't understand. That's the boat I followed.
Look, mister, your story just don't make sense. You go on back to your boat. Cast off your lines and pull out of here.
I'm sorry, Sheriff. I'm staying.
Some 50 miles away at an FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is just approaching the desk of the agent in charge.
Mr. Price.
Yes, Jim?
Could I see you for a moment, sir?
Surely. What's on your mind?
Well, I received a phone call late this afternoon from a friend of mine named Tom Logan.
Yeah?
Tom was in Army intelligence during the war. We worked together on a number of cases involving enemy aliens. That was when I was with the New York office.
I see.
One of the men we picked up at the beginning of the war was a Nazi named Frank Sebring.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been engaged in subversive activity. He was convicted on several counts and sent to a federal prison.
Hmm. I remember hearing about him.
Well, then you may recall also, sir, that Sebring was released at the end of the war and deported to Germany.
Yes, I do. But what's this got to do with your friend's phone call?
Well, Tom has been out on his boat for a fishing trip for the past week. This afternoon, a small pleasure cruiser passed him. Tom was almost certain the man at the wheel was Sebring.
What?
Yes. He said he followed the boat to a dock down near Twin Falls. No one was aboard her, so he inquired at a nearby hotel as to where the man had gone, but he couldn't learn anything there.
Jim, this sounds more like a case of mistaken identity.
Well, I thought so myself at first, sir, but Tom insisted he had the right man. Knowing him, I'm inclined to believe it.
We have a file here on Sebring, Jim. Check it. It's possible that we're both mistaken. Maybe he wasn't deported.
I already have checked on it, sir. He was sent out of the country over 6 months ago.
I see. Where's your friend now?
He's standing by down there, waiting for the man to return.
Has he contacted the local police?
I advised him to, but I'm not so sure that he will.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Price.
Yes?
I wonder if you'd give me permission to go down there. If this is a false lead, I'll be back by tomorrow night.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Too dark to see, but I didn't hear his boat pull away.
Well, he ain't going.
Why not?
He just said he was going to wait until you came back.
Did you impersonate a deputy sheriff?
Yeah.
Didn't you threaten to arrest him?
Yeah, and he just said go ahead, so what could I do?
What about the boat? Did you repaint the name?
But he's still going to stay.
What did you find out about him?
He said he was in Army intelligence during the war.
Oh?
And he also said that government agents would be very happy to grab you.
It's really going to be difficult to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Where's Anna?
Downstairs.
Bring her up here at once. We're going to have to deal with this man a bit differently.
Can you see all right, mister?
Yes, just lead the way. When did this man come to your hotel?
Oh, about 20 minutes ago. Took a room for the night.
His name is Sebring?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's got blonde hair and a mustache. Just like the fellow you was looking for. That's why I came right down to the boat to get you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, here's the back door. I'm going this way. Now, his room is right at the head of these stairs.
Thanks.
Oh, wait a minute, mister.
Yeah?
I just happened to think. There ain't going to be any trouble between you two, is there?
Well, to tell you the truth, there might be.
Oh. Then I'd better get the sheriff. He's right out in front in the lobby.
It might not be a bad idea. Bring him up to the room.
Yeah, okay.
Come in.
Yes.
Hello, Mr. Sebring.
Hello.
You remember me?
Yes, of course. You're the young man who was in Army intelligence.
That's right.
What brings you here?
Your boat passed mine on the river today. I recognized you.
So?
You were deported from this country about 6 months ago, weren't you, Sebring?
That's right.
And how did you get back here?
Illegally.
You admit that?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to have to see to it that you're deported again.
Really? How?
By turning you over to the FBI.
Have you the authority to make an arrest?
No.
Then how are you going to do it?
This should be your answer. Come in.
Here's the sheriff, mister.
Good. Come in, Sheriff.
Okay. You wanted to see me?
Yes, Sheriff. This is the man I was looking for.
Well?
He's in this country illegally. He should be arrested and turned over to the FBI.
Did you hear that, Sheriff?
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Well, now, let me see.
You should obey the man, you know.
Oh, you think so, huh?
Of course.
What is this?
Show him, Carl.
Okay.
Nice work, Sheriff.
Tonight's case from the official files will be reopened in just a moment.
Home, sweet home. A song that never grows old because love of home and love of family are emotions that never die. Never fade, never wither.
Yes, and as long as men love their homes, we of the Equitable Life Assurance Society will continue to feel proud of our assured home ownership plan. Proud because it's both a money saver and a home saver. Proud because it's America's finest plan for home ownership.
Just what is this plan, anyway?
Well, it has four main advantages. First, if the owner dies, the Equitable Society cancels the mortgage. It's paid off in full. What's more, every dollar previously paid on principal is returned to the widow along with the canceled mortgage. Second, during the owner's lifetime, a special cash fund is built up in this plan, ready for use if sickness or unemployment threaten home security. Third, as your mortgage shrinks, the cash fund increases. You can use it to pay off a 20-year mortgage, for example, in approximately 14 years. Fourth, mortgage interest is only 4%, and there is a liberal allowance to help cover title search, lawyer's fees, and other closing costs.
Could I prepay this mortgage at an early date if some unexpected good fortune makes it possible, or if I should decide to sell the house?
Yes, there is a liberal prepayment privilege. All in all, a man is mighty lucky if his health, age, income, and the location of his home qualify him for an Equitable Assured home ownership plan.
Well, how can I find out if I meet those qualifications, Mr. Keating?
Ask your Equitable Society representative. Get full information on the plan that protects you against the two major hazards of home mortgages: death and hard times. Look in the phone book or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Society.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now back to the FBI file, The Mysterious Fugitive. desire to see that justice is done is strong in almost every one of us. But sometimes that desire leads to trying to take the law into your own hands. As tonight's case from the files of your FBI illustrates, that is the wrong course of action. In every city, there is a local police force. In every state, there are state troopers. And in every section of the country, there are field offices of your FBI. It is their job to see that laws are enforced, that justice is dealt out fairly. Your job as a citizen is to respect and obey those laws. And when, as will sometimes happen, in all of a crime that's been committed, or a criminal who has gone unpunished, do not assume the responsibility of seeing justice done. Your responsibility ends when you have done your duty, when you have notified your local police. The next file continues at the police station in the town of Twin Falls. Special Agent Jim Taylor has just introduced himself to the chief of police.
Sit down, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you? Did a man named Tom Logan contact you at any time yesterday or this morning?
Logan? Mm-hmm. No, he didn't. Why?
Well, he called me yesterday afternoon. He'd been out in his boat on the river, and he thought he recognized a man who had been deported from this country some 6 months ago.
Where was this?
On the river. This man was in another boat. He trailed him to a dock about 2 miles north of here.
The one near the Riverview Hotel?
Yes, that's it. I told him to contact the police. I thought he might have come to you.
He didn't. Have you tried the Fairfield police?
Yes, I have.
How about Clearwater?
Oh, they hadn't heard from him either.
Have you looked for him?
Yes, I went down to the dock, but I couldn't find any trace of his boat.
Maybe the man took off again and Logan followed him.
Yes, that's very possible.
Did he give you a description of the other boat, the one the suspect was on?
No, he didn't.
Well, I'm afraid that... excuse me.
Oh, certainly.
Chief Merrill? Yes? Yes. What's that? Where was this? I see. What's the name of the boat? Right. Thanks a lot. I'll be right down there. Mr. Taylor.
Yes?
What does Logan look like?
Oh, he's about 6 feet tall. Has dark hair.
Was the name of his boat the Lucky Star?
Sounds like it, yes.
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you.
What?
The body of a man of that general description was just found in a boat named the Lucky Star.
Oh, no.
We can't be sure that it's Logan, of course.
Where was this?
About 10 miles down the bay. It drifted in the shore.
Let's get down there at once.
Anna, find out who that is.
Okay. Is that you, Carl?
Yeah.
We're here in the back room.
Carl, did you go into the village? Any news of the boat?
Nope.
It'll probably be found sometime this afternoon.
That soon?
I imagine so.
Well, what'll we do, Frank?
I leave tonight, just as I planned.
I suppose the police should come here.
Why should they?
Well, when they find his body. They could also learn that he docked here.
My dear sister, in the first place, we took great pains to make it appear that his death was accidental.
Why, sure we did.
Furthermore, no one knows that he used the dock except us.
I hope not.
Oh, look, Anna, stop worrying. Everything's going to be okay.
There's the body right over there, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, I see.
Well?
That's Tom Logan, all right?
Too bad.
Well, I guess we'll have to examine him.
Look at the back of his head.
Yes, I see.
Say, there's blood on the back of that boat hook there. From the position of the body, he could have very easily slipped and fallen against it.
He could have, but I don't think he did. I'd say this was very carefully staged to appear that way.
You think he caught up with the man he was looking for?
Yes. If only he'd contacted you, Chief, instead of trying to do the job alone.
Yeah. Well, shall we go below?
Oh, wait, I want to search his pockets first.
Very well.
Just barely possible that he might have left a note of some kind.
Telling you more about this man he was following?
Mm-hmm.
We just had a description of his boat.
Yes, I know.
Find anything?
And just this book of matches. Might be of some help to us.
How's that?
From the Riverview Hotel. place for the dock.
Yeah?
Well, then you must have gone in there at some time. Chief, do you know the people who run it?
Yes, a couple named Bremerton.
Well, they might be able to give us some information.
Well, we can...
Hold on a minute.
What is it?
Some blue paint here on the deck. See?
Yeah.
Very odd shade of blue. There's no color like it on the boat. It's still there. Looks like it rubbed off of something.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to scrape a few flecks of it off.
Want a knife?
No, I have one, thanks. Chief, why don't you go ashore and notify the coroner? I'll finish up here.
Go ahead, Mr. Dillon.
Thanks.
Who's that?
Chief of Police Merrill, Mrs. Bremerton.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Merrill.
Hello. This is Mr. Taylor, Mrs. Bremerton.
How do you do?
Hello.
Mr. Taylor is a special agent of the FBI.
I see.
You might be able to help him.
How?
Well, yesterday afternoon, a man named Tom Logan put his boat into that dock outside.
Tom Logan?
That's right. He was a man about 6 feet tall. Had dark hair, slightly broken nose. Did you see him by any chance?
No, sir.
Well, we have reason to believe that he came here to your hotel.
Well, I didn't see anybody that looked like him.
Did you see his boat? It was called the Lucky Star.
No, sir. Well, here's my husband. He might be able to help you.
Oh, good. Mr. Bremerton?
Oh, hello, Chief.
Oh. This is Mr. Taylor. He's from the FBI.
Hiya.
Hello there. We're looking for information, Mr. Bremerton, about a man named Logan who docked his boat outside here yesterday afternoon. It was called the Lucky Star. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Maybe you saw him. He's 6 feet tall, dark hair, slightly broken nose.
No, but I didn't see him.
Well, Chief, I'm afraid this was a bad lead. We'd better get going.
But
thanks a lot anyway, folks. Come on, Chief.
Okay. After you, sir. All right.
Carl.
Huh?
Get up there. Tell Frank who is here and hurry.
Chief, let's head out here to the end of the dock.
Okay. Say, don't you think we should have questioned the Bremertons a little more?
I purposely cut that interview short.
Why?
Did you notice Bremerton's trousers?
No, I didn't.
Well, there was a streak of blue paint on his right leg. And I'm certain it was the same color paint that I scraped off the deck of Logan's boat.
Well.
And that reminded me of where I'd seen that paint before. I noticed the can of it yesterday when I came down to the dock.
Whereabouts?
Right alongside this boat up here. Chief, shine your flashlight around, will you?
Sure. Hey, there's a paint can.
Yeah, I think that's the one. See? The same odd shade of blue.
Yeah.
I wonder if... Wait a minute. I'll shine your light again on the stern of that boat.
Right there?
Yeah, that's it. Look, Chief, the name on that boat has been freshly painted.
Ebony Queen.
Did you suppose it was called something else before? That the name was changed to avoid suspicion?
Could have been.
Well, if it was, then that's Sebring's boat.
Oh.
This whole paint cycle ties together. I think Bremerton's mixed up in this, too. Look, you go aboard, search the boat.
Right.
I'm heading for the nearest phone to call my office. I want to see if anyone named Bremerton has ever been mixed up with Sebring.
Is that you, Mr. Taylor? I'm below here. I've just been going through this chest. I found some papers that
Bradley
I...
Put it down, huh? What are you doing on this boat?
I'm Chief of Police Merrill.
You haven't answered my question.
Who are you?
That doesn't matter.
Would your name be Sebring?
Yes, it is.
Then you know why I'm here.
Yes, but unfortunately it isn't going to do you any good.
What do you mean?
I'm about to take a trip down the river. I need a change.
You won't get very far.
I will if I travel alone. You'll be with me, Chief, but only in spirit.
You talk real tough.
As a matter of fact, I am. Is that you, Carl?
Yeah.
Come below. We have company.
Okay.
You undoubtedly know the Chief of Police.
Yeah.
He was nosing around down here. We're going to have to take care of him.
Uh-huh.
Go above and cast off the line first. I would prefer that this happen while we're out on the river. Well, do as I say.
I can't.
Why not?
Because I have a gun in his back.
Huh?
Drop yours, Sebring. Pick up his gun, Chief.
Okay.
Thanks.
My office told me that Bremerton was Sebring's brother-in-law, so I dropped by, picked him up, and brought him down here.
Sure glad you did.
Now we can place them both under arrest.
It was proved that although Logan was assaulted in the hotel, his death occurred on the boat. Therefore, Sebring was convicted in a federal court for murder on the high seas and sentenced to be executed. Carl and Anna were convicted as accomplices and given a life prison term in the federal penitentiary. At this time, your FBI marked its file not closed, but dead. And it was able to do that only because of the shrewd powers of observation of a special agent who remembered where he had seen an off shade of pink. Now, those powers of observation are not a talent that anyone is born with, but they are a talent that can be developed, that has been developed in the course of study that every special agent must pass before he becomes a qualified member of your FBI, before he goes to work for you, the American people.
In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI.
You know what I'm going to do first thing tomorrow, Mr. Keating? I'm going to find out if I can qualify for an assured home ownership plan.
Mighty good idea, George, because look what you get in one package from the Equitable Society. A mortgage that's paid in full if the owner dies. If not, a cash fund to be used in financial emergencies. And mortgage interest at only 4%. No wonder it's called America's finest plan for home ownership. So don't delay. See your Equitable representative soon. Or write to the Equitable Society, care of this station.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Juvenile Shakedown.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Your narrator was Dean Carlton, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. And inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Juvenile Shakedown on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began with a bloody brawl in the darkness of an alley and ended in the glare of a fight arena with the winner and still champion, Old Kid Death.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
All that people need to make them happy, said Juvenal, are bread and circuses. And up to a point, I suppose the old Roman cynic was right. The promoter of the Metropolitan Arena probably never heard of Juvenal, but he would have agreed with him 100%. His fight club is a cut-rate monument to what the old Romans meant by circus, a place where gladiators meet regularly in combat. Its marquee flashed in the gathering twilight as I cruised past and crossed Madison and went up Clark, taking my time, for the night was young and the waking nightlife of the jukebox taverns might offer an incident for a story. But there was no inspiration there, so I kept going, cut through a cheap rooming house section and headed for the office. I stopped for a red light, and that's when it happened. A burst of footsteps pounded up from behind, and a man, his shirt blood spattered, his head bleeding, jerked open the door and piled in beside me.
Get going. They're after me. Hurry, please.
Who's after you?
They got guns. Step on them.
I ran the light, noting several figures in my rearview mirror as they stopped running and turned toward a car at the curb. I made several turns as my passenger kept looking back. And finally, satisfied that we'd lost them, he leaned back, took out a handkerchief, and wiped the blood from his face.
Lost him.
He was a stocky, heavy-shouldered guy, rather good-looking in a rugged sort of way. The ridges over his eyes were thick with old scar tissue, and there was a dent in his nose. The ear facing me seemed in good enough condition, but the mark of his profession was on him unmistakably.
Oh, thanks, pal. Thanks an awful lot. Dirty rat.
There was more than just one of them. I counted three.
There were five. I took care of the other two. The rat I mean is the one who hired him to do the job.
Who?
Marty Bannon.
Bannon?
Yeah. Some louse must have tipped him off before I was staying.
This the same Marty Bannon who was up before the grand jury last month in that gambling investigation?
You must read the papers.
Well, more than that, I covered the story.
A reporter?
I'm Randy Stone, the Chicago Star.
Oh. I'm Gunnar Evans.
Yeah, I know. I saw your name on the marquee at the Metropolitan. You're fighting Pete Madigan tonight.
That's right. You've seen me fight before, huh?
Oh, yeah, but not lately. Not since you started your comeback. Last time I saw you was over 5 years ago when you nearly lifted the crown from the middleweight champ.
See, which way are you going?
Well, right now we're heading to the hospital.
What?
Oh, look, you've got to get to a doctor.
Look, that I'm okay.
Now, you look it.
It's just a scratch. Don't let a little blood scare you.
All right. Oh, there's a cop there by that street lamp.
No, keep going. Please, I haven't got time.
What's that?
Look, Mr. Stone, I appreciate you helping me, but if I go to the cops now, they might hold me while they're investigating. I'll lose $2,000.
Your purse tonight?
More than just that. It's dough I put up to guarantee my appearance. Every dime I could scrape up. Look, I better get out.
I'll drive you to the arena.
So, thanks, but I'm going home first. Better pick up my manager.
I'll drive you there. I'm in no hurry.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Keep straight ahead. I'll tell you when to turn.
Good. What's Marty Bannon got against you?
I'll tell you someday, maybe.
Works for a gambling syndicate, doesn't he?
Works for it. He is a syndicate.
I wondered.
Turn here left.
You, owe him money?
The house right there in the corner.
Okay. The apartment house where Gunnar Evans lived was probably a very classy joint around 1910. I wondered what had happened to those fat purses he'd collected when he was one of the five ranking middleweights in the world. What had happened that he'd had to return to the ring to be a living punching bag for youngsters like Pete Madigan.
Well, thanks again.
What's the matter? What's wrong?
Nothing. Just a little dizzy, I guess.
Now, wait a minute. Come on, now, no fooling. You got to see a doctor.
I tell you I'm okay. I'll be all right.
Well, you better let me go up with you.
Stone, appreciate all you've done, but you don't have to worry.
Okay, but you can't fight tonight. Not with that gash in your head.
The heck I can't. Dan will fix it up. You just keep your mouth shut.
Dan?
My manager, Dan Morgan. It's above the hairline. They'll never notice. You coming to the fight?
You bet, and I'm going upstairs with you now, too.
I'm telling you.
Now, let's go. So we went up to his apartment together. He leaned against the doorbell like he was tired. When the door opened, he nearly fell in.
Gunner!
She was a little blonde with a baby face and eyes that were rhapsodies in blue. She shrunk back as he reached out to steady himself as though she didn't want him to touch her. And somehow the music in those big blue eyes vanished.
What happened?
Nothing much. Some hoods tried to jump me. I did all right. A friend of mine, Connie, Randy Stone, my wife. Come in.
Connie, is that him? Gunner, I've been looking all over for you. What the Sam Hill happened? I told you to...
smoke. What happened to you? Don't get excited. I had a little trouble.
Yes, in the large economy size. Five thugs jumped him.
What? Oh, don't worry about it, will you? I'm all right. Just need to sit down. Brandy Stone here helped me get out of it. Some abandoned hoods, I think, Dan.
You ask me, you better call a doctor.
Nobody's asking.
Well, he's hurt.
Will you shut up? I keep telling him I'm okay, and he keeps hollering for an ambulance. Lay off, will you, Stone?
What makes you think Marty did it?
Who else? He tried to proposition me into taking a dive, didn't he? He owns Madigan Body and Soul, don't he? He even told me he'd do something to me if I turn him down.
I'm gonna...
Well, why did you turn him down?
For $500, I should take a dive? For 500 lousy fish?
Well, why not? How far can you go? You think you're still a big shot, a headliner? Well, you're nothing but a has-been.
Now, take it easy, Connie. Gunner,
I told him to take it. I told him. How long can he last? I'm sick of being broke all the time. We needed that extra 500. Why didn't he take it?
Because I'm going to beat Maddie, and that's why.
Oh, you fool. What good is it? You'll never hit the top again. If you can't... yourself, what about me? What about that kid of yours?
Well, he's your kid, too, now. Don't you forget...
My kid? Oh, no. Don't wish him on me just because I'm married to you.
Connie.
I'm sick of playing nursemaid, do you understand? And I'm sick of living like this.
Wouldn't be if you hadn't ruined me.
What?
You've stripped me of every cent I had, threw it away on parties, clothes, gambling, made me sell a little business I had to pay your lousy debts.
Why, you cheap, punch-drunk bum.
Now stop that, Connie.
I don't have to take that talk from him or you or anyone else. I'm through, do you understand? Through, as of now.
She almost ran from the room, burst into an adjoining bedroom, and disappeared. Gunnar Evans stared at the closed door for a moment and then sat down slowly by the table. His face was gray and tired as death itself. Old Dan Morgan shook his head sadly and gently pulled Gunnar's head forward so he could have a better look at the cut on top.
You asleep, Dan?
Yeah, I put him to bed before you came in. I hope she doesn't wake. That don't look good, Gunner.
He still got that cough?
He's better. I lit the vapor lamp by his bed. He'll be all right in a day or two. You know how kids are, sick one day, up the next. Hand me that bag there, will you, Stone?
Hmm? Oh, sure. Here.
Thanks.
Connie.
Yeah?
Where are you going with that suitcase?
Connie!
Well, that's the end, I guess.
Oh, she'll be back, Gunner. You know how she is.
Yeah. I know.
Now, be still. I want to fix
this. No, no. I want to take a look at Billy. Maybe he's uncovered.
A young kid?
Five.
She's not his real mother, huh?
No. Billy's ma died when he was two. Gunner married Connie 6 months ago. Thought the boy needed a mother. Some mother. She hates a little fella.
It's a shame.
Well, Aggie and me, we never had any children ourselves, but if we ever had, I'd want him to be like Gunner's boy.
What a kid.
Smart. I don't get it. How can any woman, even a gold-digging little witch like Connie, not want him? Still sleeping, huh?
Yeah. I'll have to see if I can get one of the neighbors to stay with him while we're gone.
Now, sit down. I'll get my bag.
What about it, Dan? Don't you think this is a job for a doctor? That...
Will you keep out of this?
I was going to tell you, maybe you shouldn't fight tonight.
Dan, for the love of Mike, don't you let me down, too. Every cent I got is tied up in that forfeit. $2,000.
Well, I don't like the looks of it, but... Okay. You don't think you've lost too much blood?
Nuts. Get to work. Time's running out. We got to be at the arena pretty soon.
Yeah, very well. Hold still now. This stuff is going to sting.
Go on. I only wish... I knew who tipped Bannon off where I was staying.
They stole a piece of cotton.
There.
Oh. Here.
You didn't mention it to anyone, did you, Dan?
Of course not. Skin clips, a little jar of alcohol.
Oh, this?
Yeah.
You mean you moved out of here and you were living in a rented room?
He was only there the last 2 days. We were afraid something like this would happen if they knew where to find him.
Somebody must have tipped him off. They ain't bloodhounds.
It must have been a fluke. Somebody must have seen you around there. Collodion, round bottle.
Yeah, yeah. Why would Marty Bannon go to all that trouble to keep you from fighting tonight? The odds are 5-1 on Madigan, aren't they?
Maybe they are, chum, but Bannon don't bet on anything that isn't a sure thing. Thought he could buy me for a lousy 500. Well, he was wrong.
Easy, I'm almost through.
I figured it was safer to claim I run out and divide my $2,000 forfeit money with that dumb punk of his.
Well, for Pete's sake, what about the police? The boxing commission?
I open my yap and they start an investigation. Cancel a fight. And who's hurt? Bannon? Nah. What can I prove? I need that dough, Randy. I need it bad.
I watched the savage gash in Gunnar Evans' head close up and vanish under the magic touch of Dan Morgan's fingers. When he finally combed the hair over it and put away his tools, I was almost convinced that my concern had been overdone. Dan's fighter looked as good as new.
Now you go in the bedroom and get a half hour's rest, Gunnar. Try to sleep.
But I gotta find a sitter.
Forget it. I'll call my wife. Aggie will be glad to come over.
Oh, that'd be swell. I'd sure appreciate it, Dan.
She'd be tickled to do it. You know how crazy she is over Billy.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, why not leave him with us until you get straightened out?
I'll think about it.
Billy can always find a home with Aggie and me, Gunner. I only wish I had him for keeps.
Not a chance.
You better get some sleep while you can. You need it.
Yeah. I'm going. Oh, thanks, Stone. Thanks a million.
I went down into the street, got into my car. I lit a cigarette, thinking of what was to come and hating it. Gunner didn't have a chance. The odds were all against him to start with. But now Marty Bannon and his thugs had guaranteed it. The more I thought about it, the sicker and angrier I got. I knew Marty's address from the last time the police had visited him. Maybe he ought to know he wasn't having himself a private party with Gunner. Maybe he ought to know that if he got too rough, I might just invite the 800,000 star subscribers. So I started up and headed northwest. Maybe I could put a scare into this mother. Bannon lived in a single penthouse apartment in the medium high rent district. I pressed the doorbell, and after a moment, a small peephole opened. An eye gave me a fishy stare, and the door swung wide.
Well?
How are you, Marty? Remember me? Stone, Chicago Star.
Oh, yeah, one of those poison pen artists. What do you want?
A little talk.
About what?
About Gunnar Evans.
Come in. All right, spill it. What's in your mind?
Who is it, doll baby?
Shut up.
Well, I like that. I only asked to...
You.
Gunner's wife stood in the foyer entrance. Like Bannon, she was in evening clothes, wearing a gown that showed everything but good taste. When I saw, I knew who had tipped Bannon off where Gunner had been hiding, and who had sent those goons on a murder trail. It was Connie herself.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Little-known episodes from the exciting annals of American history are presented in colorful, dramatic, factual manner on the Cavalcade of America, which returns over most of these NBC stations on Tuesday, August 29th. That's Cavalcade of America, returning Tuesday, August 29th. And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
I wanted to see Marty Bannon about the fix he was trying to muscle through on tonight's fight between Pete Madigan and Gunnar Evans. When I saw Connie, Gunner's wife, in Marty's apartment, I knew my words would be as useless as rain on Lake Michigan. It was she who'd betrayed her own husband and told Bannon where his thugs could find him. Her big blue eyes widened when she saw me and then hardened into chips of ice.
You get around, don't you, Stone?
Yeah, but it'd be tough trying to keep up with you, baby.
Connie, I told you to stay back.
What are you worrying about, Bannon? Gunner Evans is bound to find out sooner or later. Probably sooner.
Who cares? I'm through with that dumb ape, and he might as well know it now as any time.
Look, dollface, I got enough to worry about without having a punchy mad dog on my trail. Too many big deals coming up.
What's the matter, Bannon? You don't think he's got enough against you already?
He can't prove a thing. You value your health, you forget you were here tonight.
I thought you were smarter than that. A guy who fools around another man's wife is like a rented tuxedo. He never knows who's going to spill something on him.
Be sure it ain't you. Now get out.
Well, maybe I had done some good. I didn't know. At least he'd know now that somebody else knew what going on. He'd drop the rough stuff, the fight would go on, and if he tried anything afterwards, it would be dangerous. I went back down to the lobby, walked out into the street. A taxi had pulled up to the curb, and the passenger was paying off the hacky. As I turned and stepped out onto the sidewalk, he turned around, and a cold chill hit me. It was Gunnar Evans.
Helen, what are you doing here?
Well, I bet myself that you'd win tonight, and I came here to make sure I'd have a chance to win the bet.
You won't, so forget it.
Why not? Why did you come here?
For home, Stone. One second.
No, wait a minute. What are you seeing Bannon for?
Get out of my way.
You're supposed to be taking a nap and resting up. Why'd you come here?
Take the $500. What else?
Why? After what Bannon's done to you, after what you said, why? Why?
Got to thinking, lying there. What was I gaining being so big and noble? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Your self-respect?
You can starve on self-respect. Look out. You can see your kid go hungry, your marriage go on the rocks. I got nothing to gain and everything to lose. So I'll take the $500. What does it matter? I'm washed up. I might as well face it.
But you can quit clean. You don't have to wind up crooked. You can get a job, do something else.
What? The only thing I ever done except fight, drive a truck, and I can't do that now.
Why not?
Because I'm half blind, you fool.
You're what?
Oh, I can see you well enough for anybody else who's close up. You don't have to see like an eagle when you throw a lever. But I can't pass no truck driving test.
Well, I didn't know.
Bring me a little bit.
I didn't know.
Nobody knows, not even Dan. You don't fight over 400 fights without losing something. With some guys, it's their brains. With others, their hearing or their teeth or their kidneys. With me, it's my eyes. Yeah, and my teeth, too, and... boy, things have been going my brains for all I know.
All right. Now, come on back home, kid. You don't need Bannon's dough. It smells.
No, but I need my wife. If I can find her and tell her I took Bannon's offer, well, she might come back. Get out of the elevator door. Move. I'm not breaking up my marriage for any $500. Bannon's on the 14th floor, ain't he?
Yeah, the 14th floor. Wait.
You coming along for the ride?
You're making a bad mistake, Gunner, going to Bannon's. It's the worst thing you could do. Now, come on.
Oh, preach, Stone. I'm sick of it. I made up my mind. Sure, I know. It's the end of the trail. So what? I never hit the championship gravy, and even when you do, it ends up like this lots of times. No dough, no eyes, no brain.
You still got brains enough to lick this thing, Gunner. Believe me.
Where's the button? Well, Stone, it's different when you're young. The promises sound good. The world looks good. You read the stuff they print about you in the paper, you're great. Sure, it gripes me that everybody seems to be making off their fights except you. The gamblers, the crooked managers, the shady promoters. Of course, they ain't all that way. There are some pretty good guys like Dan Morgan. He's the first honest manager I ever had. But there's so many of the others. So you bust your fingers. You can't sleep for nights on account. Your hands are like two big hearts beating with pain pumping through them instead of blood. You get your teeth knocked out. You can't breathe on account of your nose is busted. The years go by and where are you? What do you got?
Then one day you wake up and the fires inside you are out and you're like a furnace full of clinkers. You're an old man. Is that it?
Yeah. An old man. You know how old I am? 33.
Gunner, I wish you wouldn't.
Let go of me.
All right. If you must, you must. But before you ring that bell, there's something that... something you should know about what you're going to find in there.
Yeah? What? What is it? What are you trying to say?
Okay, Marty, I'll meet you right after the fight. Then we can... Gunner!
Gunner!
Marty, it's Gunner!
Open up, Gunner!
Gunner, it's no good. She's not worth it.
I'll kill the rat!
Come on, get a grip on yourself. Gunner!
Get away from me! Connie! I'll break it down for help me!
Gunner, for the love of Mike!
I told you to let me go!
Listen to me!
You ask for it!
Whatever time had done to Gunnar Evans' legs, it certainly hadn't affected his punch. I went out like a shattered light bulb. When I came to, I was sprawled on my back in front of Bannon's penthouse apartment. The door was still locked, but I could see through it like it wasn't there. The simple reason that the main part wasn't. The entire middle panel was smashed through. Only the frame remained. I got up slowly. My jaw hurt and my brain was full of angry bees. I stepped through the broken door and looked around. I saw them. Connie and Marty lying at opposite sides of the living room. Their heads were twisted at curious angles, their necks purplish and swollen. And they were both quite dead. I found a telephone. I called the police and sat there a while, trying to brush the fog away. My head throbbed as I tried to remember something I felt was important, but I couldn't quite recall. And then suddenly it came to me. The fight. The Metropolitan Arena. Evans versus Madigan. That's where he'd be. That's where I'd find the gunner. I stumbled to the elevator, went downstairs, found my car, and drove out to the arena. Is Gunner Evans here?
Is he here? He's fighting tonight. Don't you see the signs?
Yeah. We're just in time for the main goal, mister. Ringside? I got one on the aisle, row 5.
Here's my press card.
Say, what's going on anyway, you know?
Meaning what?
I mean him coming in just a little while before the semifinal was over. His manager and the promoter was tearing their hair.
You say the main goal's about to start?
Bell for round 1 rang 30 seconds ago. If you're covering the fight, better get on in.
I headed down the main aisle for the press section at ringside. What was going on in that ring brought me to a standstill more than once before I finally got to the ringside and began easing my way around the gunner's corner. I couldn't take my eyes off him. The gunner was tearing into Pete Madigan with a slashing fury that brought the crowd to its feet and kept it there. This fight wasn't going to last any 10 rounds. I could see the gunner's manager, Dan Moran, standing at the ring apron, pounding it with his fist. How are you, Dan?
Stone.
He's terrific.
I don't know.
Martin! Jab him now, jab him! That's a boy.
What do you mean, you don't know?
I've been trying to get him to box, but he won't. Look at him. He's fighting Madigan's fight. He can't last. His legs won't take him, not for 10 rounds. Something's the matter with him.
Yeah, something's the matter, all right.
He finally showed up. He looked funny, acted funny. Something's happened. I don't know what.
Hook him! Hook him! He's wide open! Turn up, baby! Watch it! Watch it! That's the ticket. Jab him, Dizzy!
All right, boys. Get that stool in there fast.
Okay, Dan.
Take his mouthpiece out. My gosh, he shouldn't be breathing like that after only one round.
Dan, I want to tell you something. Gunner's in trouble. He's terrible trouble. Any minute the police...
Listen to him. Something's the matter with him. Look, Randy, do me a favor. Go back to Gunner's dressing room and have a look at Billy.
Who?
Billy. Gunner's little boy. I put him to bed there.
What is he doing here? I thought your wife...
Yeah. Gunner showed up. Yeah, just before he came here and took Billy with him.
Why?
Maybe he's afraid Bannon's hood might break in the house. Take it out on Billy. I don't know. Now, go on, will you?
Okay.
I gave one of the boys a buck to keep an eye on him. Make sure he's okay.
All right, don't worry. I went back down the ramp into the dressing room. Billy was sleeping on the rubbing table between several training gloves, big as pillows to keep him from rolling off. Dan had covered him with an old bathrobe and pillowed his curly head with some folded towels.
Cute little fella, ain't he?
It's a wonder he's been able to sleep through all this noise.
Yeah, but I guess he was just real wore out.
Yeah, I reckon he was.
Well, there's the buzzer for round 2.
Yeah, well, I'll go up and have a look.
Okay, mister.
I walked up the ramp, down the aisle toward the press section. Round 2 was a facsimile, it seemed, of round 1. How many rounds could a man go at this pace? It was pressing Madigan every second, a slashing, ripping attack, like a madman, I kept thinking. Like a bulb that flares more brightly than it ever has before the instant before it goes out. Gunner Evans was fighting the greatest fight of his career and the last fight of his career. And then he was down. Gunner Evans was down.
Fight! Fight! He wasn't even hurt! Take the dive!
It certainly seemed that way. Gunner lay sprawled on the canvas like a puppet whose strings had been cut. He didn't stir as the referee's voice came through the pandemonium. I walked down the aisle through a now hushed crowd. Nobody moved. When I finally got to the ringside, Dan and his 2 seconds were still working on Gunner. A scared, haunted look at began to deepen the furrows of Dan's wrinkled face. Presently, the commission doctor climbed into the ring and knelt beside the fallen fighter. After a while, he looked up, pointing to the patched-up wound on Gunner's head. It had oozed some blood, but now it had stopped.
This man was hurt before the fight.
Yeah, he cut his head. I told him he shouldn't fight, but he insisted on going on.
In heaven's name, why?
He had a $2,000 forfeit posted.
$2,000.
How bad is it, Doc?
His skull was fractured before he entered the ring.
You mean that...
He's dead.
We went back to the dressing room, Dan and I. I tried to tell him what had happened at Bannon's apartment, but he didn't seem to hear. He shuffled along, his head bowed, his eyes red. We stared at the sleeping child, and I asked Dan, "Gonna have any relatives?"
I don't know. None that I know of. No. Gunner didn't have any kin.
You mean Billy's alone?
Alone? Of course not. He's not alone. Billy's got me and Aggie, ain't he?
Well, then you better take him before the police get here. Yeah. Take him home with you.
Yeah. Yeah, poor little fella. He must be tired. Didn't open an eye. Yeah, I'll take him home. Don't want to take any chances. There's a cop coming back.
You gonna keep him, Dan? Huh? You said you wanted him, didn't you?
You mean?
Gunner would have wanted you to have him.
Billy.
He's yours, Dan. For keeps. Your son. Well, 4 a.m. and another edition about to go to press. Another sunrise about to dawn. The death of one cycle, the birth of another. Or maybe it's all one, like time itself. Well, I'm not going metaphysical at this hour. But I can't help thinking that Gunner Evans maybe wasn't such a failure after all. In a way, he's still punching. He's still alive with a new set of dreams and a future ahead. Yep, in his son. I guess basically that's why our children mean so much to all of us. Like the philosopher said, there are only chances for earthly immortality. I'll have to get married one of these days. Copying boy.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Irvin Ashkenazy with music by Frank Worth. The part of Gunner Evans was played by Don Diamond. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches...